in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and more people have died there than in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Darfur combined. The most frequent targets of this hidden war are women. It is, in fact, a war against women, and the weapon used to destroy them, their families, and whole communities is rape.
This is Bukavu, capital of the South Kivu province of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and home to over 800,000 people. Rape and sexual violence are a problem here as a result of years of war, corruption, and a lack of engagement.
Hi, this is Karin Weiss, and welcome to the Medicus Mundi Switzerland Health for All podcast. And today we talk with Aji Bapolisi, who is a Congolese medical doctor and trained in psychiatry, who did his training in Uganda while taking care of refugees in a camp. He came back in 2018 to Bukavu, his native town in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and has since then worked as a psychiatrist in the General Hospital. He is currently in Belgium writing his PhD. Hi, Achille. Thank you so much for being my guest at the Medicus Mundi Switzerland Health for All podcast today. Welcome to this episode.
Hi, Karin. Thanks for having me.
You are one of three psychiatrists in Bukavu, a city with more than 1 million people. Why did you become a psychiatrist?
My journey to become a psychiatrist began in 2014. So I was in internal medicine in Bukavu. Bukavu is a town affected by war. I remember that at that time, I began to remark that most of my patients consulting in internal medicine were suffering also from mental health problems. There was no psychiatrist around to take care of them. Most of them were having depression or PTSD, sometimes somatic symptoms masking mental health problems. So I do remember that during my medical training, I was interested in neurosciences and psychology. So on that time, it made sense for me that I should be a psychiatrist because it's urgently needed in my country, and it also fed my aspiration, my vocation as a medical doctor. That is how I began my journey in being trained as a psychiatrist.
You are one in three psychiatrists in Bukavu. Is it so unpopular in your country to become a psychiatrist?
Yes, actually it is unpopular. And I think it's mainly because of two reasons. The first one is about stigmatization. When usually people talk about stigmatization, they do refer to experience of patients. But I think that it's larger than that because mental health is stigmatized. People don't want to think about mental health. It's really stigmatized. I do remember the first time that I told my colleagues that I'm planning to go and do psychiatry. Most of them were surprised. Like they didn't understand how that I left internal medicine to do psychiatry. And the second reason is also about in my country, psychiatrists are not well paid. There is not a lot of money put in psychiatry and mental health in general. So medical doctors are not motivated to go and do psychiatry. I think that those are the reasons why psychiatry is not so popular in my country.
You mentioned two reasons why it is rather unpopular. What could be the solution to solve this unbalanced training in psychiatry or in psychology?
What we need actually is like people being more and more aware of the need of mental health as a way to solve many problems in Congo and in the world. Sometimes they do refer to mental health like politically, but when it's about putting money, when it's about of putting resources in there to help having trained practitioners, to have good hospitals to take care of patients, there are very few donors there, and the government in Congo is not investing a lot of money in there. So I think that people must be aware of that, and must be aware of that all the things that are not going well in Congo. Most of them them are like, for example, economical situation, safety, peace projects. Somehow they are strongly related to the mental health of the population there. And people on the level of the government, of the level of the population, must be aware of that. It is very important.
When we first met in 2018, you were based in Uganda in a refugee camp. What kind of patients did you counsel?
So on that time, I was a really very significant experience as a psychiatrist and also as a human being, because on that time I was treating mainly refugees. So those were refugees coming from 9 different countries in Africa, including DRC, of course, but also Somalia, Sudan, Rwanda, Burundi, Eritrean, Kenya, and Liberia. So that was a very rich experience in terms of the multicultural situation of those refugees, but also in terms of their own experiences, traumatic experiences. It helped me to grow as a psychiatrist and to have a larger view of what needs to be done, even in the term of humanitarian level, as far as mental health is concerned.
Why did they end up in a refugee camp, and why did they need psychological support?
Actually, most of those refugees experienced many traumatic events in their own countries. Like, there were many countries in Africa who were in war or who had been in war in the recent years before that time. So they end up in Uganda because Uganda is still one of the welcoming countries for refugees. Actually, it's welcome a lot of refugees over Africa. So they had all those very, very bad experiences like rape, tortures, being kidnapped, being tortured. So they had all those experiences coming from their own countries. And also they were telling me about their journey before they reached Uganda. And even when they were staying in the camp, they had also opportunities to being re-traumatized many times. So most of them were presenting symptoms of PTSD, symptoms of depressions, sometimes complex features which were quite psychotic. So in terms of pathophysiology, they were presenting very disturbing symptoms.
And can you share a success story of a patient which recovered from a trauma he or she experienced?
Actually, I got many rich experiences there with patients. I came to know people who were quite heroic in their lives, with their families, who were trying to give the best from themselves, despite the fact that they went through the worst situation you can ever imagine. One of them that come in my mind right now, it's one of a woman, actually a woman who was raped in her own country. And that happened when all his family was witnessing when she was being raped. And by the time I saw her, like, it was 3 years after that rape, she was deeply depressed with severe symptoms of PTSD. And mostly she got actually a child from that rape. So the boy was almost 3 years and a half when I saw them. So she was completely unwell. Even the family, there was a big dysfunction in their relationships. They were barely speaking to each other when I saw them. It was one also clinically speaking, one of the most challenging situations that I came across. I was young as a psychiatrist, almost inexperienced. So we tried to do what we could with the resources that we had on that time. So we got a pharmaceutical treatment, an individual psychotherapy, and also a family therapy. That therapy went on for quite, I think, almost 2 years. For me, she's really, really heroic because at the end of the treatment, she was willing to go back to school. She had a healthier relationship with herself, with her child, and with her family. For me, it was an illustration or a concretization of what is best known actually in scientific term in terms of resilience. I even got a letter from her. It was 3 months ago, and telling me how well she's trying to carry on with her life. She has a new relationship with her fiancé, and she's still going to school. So there are so many of those experiences coming from our patients who, as I said, are very heroic. And I think that in one way, they are the ones who are giving us the strength to carry on in our job.
Yeah, I just thought that gives a lot of strength. This is really impressive. And I was wondering, how do you cope with all these difficult stories?
It is very difficult. It's one of the most difficult things that I think that someone can do, because when you spend your time hearing those stories, trying to be there, it's so challenging for you, like a psychiatrist, but also like a human being. And mostly when you are coming also from the same context, when somehow those things happened to you or to your family, or can happen to your family or can happen to you, it's like you are getting also traumatized. And one of the things that I've learned is really to take care of myself. One of the things that I do actually is to be in touch with some of my seniors, colleagues, to debrief after each story, which was particularly challenging for me. So one of the things also that I do is to be in touch with some kind of beauty in life. I am also a Christian. I pray a lot. I feel like I'm connected to something beautiful, something more stronger, something more peaceful. That's what I'm hearing. As a Christian, I call it God. I know that many people have different ways to relate to it, but it also helped me a lot. I think that also we have to be aware of those small things that are happening around us. People who are showing us a lot of generosity, strength of character, even our patients. All those small things that remind us good people can be despite of what is happening in their lives.
You came back to Bukavu at the end of 2018. How was the experience in coming back to your country?
Bukavu, it's a very complex place to live in, because although there is no formal war going there, there is that climate of not being safe. Every now and then, people are being killed, kidnapped in Bukavu. After a certain time in the evening, you cannot go out if you don't have a car. So in the hospital, we do receive people who were attacked by soldiers, by other people. So it's not safe there. Aside of that, a lot of poverty, economical poverty, and the population is traumatized there. It was very difficult for me. It is still very difficult for me working in that environment. But the saddest thing is actually mental health is not supported as much as it should. In that context, there are times when I feel powerless in that environment. That is my experience, but we are keeping doing what we can. Hopefully, we are going to find a way to move things from there.
Yes, I remember Bukavu very well because I used to live there for about 6 weeks supporting a survey. And I also remember that I had to watch out for my own safety. What does that mean for women in general in Bukavu?
Actually, I think that in general, women are more vulnerable in the context of armed conflict. Actually, there is that sad reputation of Bukavu and of Eastern Democratic of Congo, like being one of the worst places in the world for a woman to live in, because there were those statistics of rape, all those stories. And I think that's the reason why they gave Tom Kwege a Nobel Prize in his work working with people who were raped. And I also think that in some villages, actually, there are some places when women were raped systematically. Apart from that, there is also the aftermath aftermath of war, like the poverty, the inefficacy of healthcare that indirectly affects women. So it is very difficult for women to live in Bukavu. And as far as we have to assist people, we have to give specific care in women, specific space for them to express themselves, as is not easy for them.
Are more women coming to your clinic in the general hospital in Bukavu, or also men?
Most of them are women. Of course, we have also men coming. Most of them are women. I think that there is two reasons of them. Maybe there are some risk factors, as I was saying, sexual assaults, also those vulnerability due to their position in the society. But I think that maybe there is also a cultural thing around it, because in our context, it's even easier to a woman to come and to report if she's not doing well. Most of the time, men are supposed, according to the culture, to not complaining about what they are feeling. And I think that's maybe one of the reasons why men are more affected by taking alcohol or using substances, because they are denying what they are feeling, all the experience they went through. So, but there is a difference between men and women. Women came mostly in my clinic more than men, actually.
And how could we change the situation so that men would take up more responsibility for their own lives, for their emotions and their behavior, so that the cycle of violence and rape could be stopped?
One of the things that we need to do, actually, is to have all people talking about what they feel, what they are experiencing. That must be done in each level of the society. That must be done in schools. That must be done in families. That must be done in churches. That must be done in the radio, in the society. I think that people must talk about their feelings, about what they are observing, feeling, how they are reacting. And that will help a lot of people, because when people are not talking about it, they are sometimes unconsciously reproducing the same cycle of trauma, where without knowing it, they are perpetrators of trauma. Without knowing it, they are having those behavior that actually entertain that vicious circle. I think that we have to put words in what people are feeling, and that's going to increase awareness about mental problems.
And we have now a pandemic which hit us quite hard. How did the COVID-19 pandemic affect the mental health status of your community of Bukavu?
That's a very nice question, because when we do speak about COVID-19 pandemic, I usually be told that, you know, Bukavu is not affected as were some towns in Europe or in America. But one thing that people tend to forget is at the beginning of pandemic, when we were watching all those people dying with a lot of emotion, all those people dying in Italy, for example, or in America, or in France, we are seeing all those people dying, and there were many, and that was so impressive. But I do remember sometimes some experts were saying that, you know what, save your tears for Africa, because people are dying here, but what will happen in Africa will be worse than anything that you have ever imagined. And like an African, we were watching those things and we were hearing those statements, and people got afraid. That had a very big impact in their mental health. And I do remember when I, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was receiving many patients, actually, many patients coming with an acute stress reaction, a lot of apprehension. And what was also particular is that even medical doctors and nurses were apprehending that moment when the pandemic will reach there, and they know that they cannot trust the health system, which is not good enough. And anyway, the better health system are failing in Europe. So I think that the mental health impact of COVID-19 was worse than the pandemic itself in Africa. One of the manifestation of trauma somehow is a kind of paranoia, people fearing everything. And maybe the resistance that people are showing against vaccination, it may be one of the signs of traumatization. Like we are not trusting anyone because we have been affected a lot by wars, by all those things. So we are not going to accept those vaccines, and they are going to tend to accept those conspiracy theories. And that's also something that need to be addressed in terms of mental health.
You mentioned that people lack the awareness of mental health and do not know how to cope with all these emotions. What could be beneficial for communities to learn basic coping skills and to open up and to seek help?
Actually, I think one of my vision of taking care of mental health problem in Africa, I think that what we need to be is to help the community to take care of their own issues, to be talking about what they feel, to be seeing what kind of resources they have in terms of resilience resources, how they can take care to each other, how they can help each other. The resources in terms of telling stories, in terms of helping people who were attacked. It is very, very important of the community to be aware that they are very powerful about preventing mental health problems. We need also to have professionals, people who can help them to phrase things in the term of that may help them to get better. We need people, we need psychiatrists, psychologists, we need mental health professionals to help them to cope with all those things that are not obvious to talk about when they are alone and who somehow are still unconscious.
And you mentioned the poverty in your country, and in my country, in Switzerland, psychiatrists are very expensive, but health insurance is supporting the patient. How is the financial situation in your country?
In my country, most of the patients are not able to afford their care. And we don't have insurance, and the government's not involved in the care in general, and even less in mental health. If you see the budget of my country, less than 1% is directed in health. Even in that very difficult time of COVID-19 pandemics, medical doctors are not paid. In general, and psychiatrists even more, because sometimes they are paid by patients, but it's going to be easier for a patient to pay, for example, when he needs a surgical intervention, but when he needs a psychotherapy or psychiatric care, it's going to be very difficult for them to pay for that, to sustain paying for that. And since mental health patients are also one of the poor in the society, it's even more complicated for them if they don't have help. I think that also psychiatrists need a lot of time spending with one patient. So in terms of comparing how much they are earning with others practitioners like in internal medicine or surgery, they are the less paid. So it is very difficult to have a department of psychiatry which will be effective, which will have a lot of resources. I think that we need a lot of support. We need a lot of support. I think that many NGOs came in Africa with mental health programs which were on and off according to the project, according to the context. But what really need to be done is to support the institution there, to have something that can be sustained over time. I think that it's very difficult for mental health right now. And my fear is the more difficult it gets, even the small mental health practitioner that we have may go somewhere else when it's going to be easier for them and for their family to survive, as that happened in many countries in the world who were also experiencing the same problem.
If you had all the means, what would you do for your country?
One of the first things that I will do is to not let mental health being a problem for psychiatrists and solved by psychiatrists. I would like to make it a problem of everyone and each one to be able to talk about it, to be able to talk, to name when something is not going well, to be able to name when they are not feeling well, like to have that that project, that problem, that challenge being owned by each one in my country. Also to have as many people specializing in that's very important field. Talking about psychologists, I'm talking about social workers, I'm talking about other psychiatric nurses. I think that also I will try to have a health system that's integrating completely mental health at each level, at the general hospital, in primary healthcare facilities, in university hospitals. So it's going to reduce stigmatization at each level. So that's what I'm aiming at, and I hope somehow I'll find a way to do it in my country.
Thank you so much for this very insightful talk and for being my guest at the Medicus Mundi Switzerland Health for All podcast today. I wish you a lot of success for your future endeavors.
Thank you, Karin.
This was the Medicus Mundi Switzerland Health for All podcast with Karin Weiss. You can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and on our website. To spread the message, please leave a comment on our website, share and like it. Stay tuned and watch out for the next episode about mental health.